Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include runner-up for both the 2013... No, fuck, I can't remember.
2014, yeah.
2014, yeah. Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include runner-up for both the 2013 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014. Fuck, all right. How about I just get my prompt?
Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of The Winning Agenda. This is Shilzy filling in for Brian, who disappeared last week to study Antarctic seals and their migration habits. I'm joined tonight by Jesse Marshall and Brian Holland, who just rocked in the door. How you doing, Brian?
Doing well, Shilzy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for having me on your show.
That's right.
Back to you, Brian.
No problem. We thought we'd kick off the conversation tonight with a discussion on what we're currently brewing with Order and Chaos. We've recently got it here in Australia, and we're putting some decks together and testing the hell out of them. So, Jesse, how have you found things so far?
Well, also, thanks for having me on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Order and Chaos is an absolute blast. I mean, every time a big box comes out, everyone gets pretty excited for good reason. There's lots of new cards, and this one is, I know when I was speaking to Lucas at Worlds, he was saying this is his favorite big box so far, and I'd just seen the spoils at that point, and I was like, politely, like, yeah, okay, because I wasn't really that excited about it. But now that I've had a chance to play some of the cards and see the depth in this box, I think it really does stand up there with the other two boxes as a really quality addition to the game. And I think something that Honor and Profit did, which people weren't really expecting, though I think the Team Covenant guys really nailed it when they were speaking about that box, was that it gave the factions new depth. It meant that Jinteki was no longer shoehorned into a particular strategy, criminals were no longer shoehorned into an aggressive strategy. It gave them both a lot more depth to what they could do. You suddenly had these really powerful Replicating Perfection decks coming out because they had the tools to do that. And I think this box has really done that for Wayland and for Anarch. It's given Anarch some access to really powerful card draw, which they haven't had before. It's given them access to some consistency and some ID abilities that take the faction in a new direction, that still allow them to be aggressive or allow them to play a more controlling role. And on the Wayland side, you've got three IDs that all do different interesting things. And I think these three IDs are going to be around for the long game. They don't seem to have a use-by date on them, and I think they'll only grow better with age.
Excellent. What decks have you brewed at the moment that you're currently testing?
The two decks that I'm most excited about are a Building a Better World deck, the Wayland Corset Identity, which is utilizing it's a Scorched Earth deck. Wayland Scorched is one of my favorite archetypes. It's the deck that I played at Nationals last year. It's the deck that I also played throughout the whole Store Championship season last year, and I've always got it sort of there in the back pocket, waiting to bring it out and retune it when there are more tools available. And this box has certainly brought a whole lot more tools. Firewall is a fantastic piece of ice, as we discussed in our Order and Chaos review. Gives you that real mid-range in-faction piece of ice that Wayland is really lacking, other than Archer. It's also playing Archers. I've got some snares in there, and I'm using the new ice checkpoint to provide a real penalty for runners who are face-checking early and who are wanting to press through into the remote. So checkpoint is a 4-cost strength 7 code gate. When you res it, you take a bad pub. Trace 5 is the subroutine. If successful, do 3 meat damage when the run is successful. So if you chuck that on a remote, yes, you take a bad pub, which can harm your long game, but you're also putting the runner into some pretty difficult positions. They run through your checkpoint. They probably can't break it early because it's a strength 7 code gate. That's reasonably expensive. They might let you fire off the trace. If you win the trace 5 is a reasonable start, so you should be able to win them. And if you do win them, they're put in a real quandary. Do they keep going and potentially run into a snare or run into an asset or something that's not particularly useful? Or is it an agenda? And if it is an agenda, potentially you get to score it. You've also got other ice that you can place in those servers, being the Archer, the Firewall, that are reasonably powerful, or some other small ice as well, Enigma's Ice Walls, other small early game ice. I'm also running Corporate Troubleshooters to beef up the ice. So you've got snares, corporate troubleshooters, I've got an ash in there. And then if it is an agenda that they steal and they do make the right call running through that checkpoint, I've got mid-season replacements to punish them as well. So the deck's really trying to place some pressure on the runner, play shell games, make it really question every decision they make. And checkpoint is a card that's allowed Wayland to do that in a way that it wasn't before. And Building a Better World is a great identity to try and do it in because it gets you enough early game money through the identity ability that if you're running the usual suite of Beanstalk hedge fund restructure, you can get enough money to reliably be winning those traces even after raising the checkpoint and still be able to fire off your snares. So that's what I'm going with at the moment. I'm pretty excited about how it's turning out.
Given that the operation windows for mid-season replacements, they're just so small, they do require so much investment. Have you considered punitive Counter-Strike, which doesn't require the influence splash, doesn't require the scoring window, and doesn't require the trace investment, other than when you can actually kill them with it?
Yeah, so I think the thing about punitive Counter-Strike is that you can only reliably be killing them off your larger agendas. So the deck's playing High-Risk Investment, which is a fantastic agenda with Scorched Earth, Hostile Takeovers, Atlases, and an NAPD contract. So yes, you can feed them an NAPD or an Atlas, but that's probably not going to be enough to kill them unless they've run through a checkpoint on their last click. So it's more reliable in that window. As you say, mid-season and Punitive Counter-Strike do have the same window, but being able to mid-season them gives you a whole nother game plan for the rest of the game, whereas Punitive, you have to have enough Punitives in hand to kill them based on the agenda points that they stole in the last turn, which is a little bit narrower. And the other thing that has made mid-season a little bit more appealing is that you've now got Traffic Accident, so you don't need as much money after you've invested in mid-season to be able to kill a runner. So you can kill them with a Scorched Earth and a Traffic Accident if they've got no Plasgreeds in play, or you can, if they've got a Plasgreed in play, you can kill them with two Scorched Earths and a Traffic Accident. So not only does Traffic Accident give you another card that can become the second or third Scorched Earth, but it also costs 0 credits, which can mean that you'll get to be able to kill them a little bit faster as well.
Yeah, I must say, I've only really seen Punitive Counter-Strike work in two different ways, and that's one, having your opponent rip 5 agenda points off the top of R&D, which is something you weren't planning for, and you just happen to have the Punitive Counter-Strike and the money in hand, or when you bait the runner into running Archives and you've got 6 points of agendas in there and you plan on killing them with it. And you'll get someone once with that, but you'll only get them once because they're never going to fall for that again. So I do think that mid-season is probably the right call there.
The other thing that really, another card that we sort of skimmed over a little bit in our review, which I've since become quite enamored of, is Cyberdeck's Virus Suite. And we didn't really discuss in depth the fact that it triggers from Archives and the fact that it triggers from anywhere that it's accessed. Not only is it going to provide an answer to Clot for corporations as a way of purging at instant speed in the future when Clot's released in the next pack, but it's also another way to punish runners for running Archives. Not only punish them, but punish them in a way that's really valuable for decks that are running high strength ice, like Wayland decks that are running, you know, Firewall, Checkpoint, and Archer. So I'm really loving Cyberdeck's Virus Suite as well.
Chilzy, you've been toying around with the Valencia deck. How's that been going for you?
Yeah. I really like control decks just in general. Basically, anytime I can build a new deck, I like to toy around with the control deck. And in the past, I've played Replicating Perfection control, and I've tried to build an NBN Glacial control. And lately, I've been playing a noise control deck that just, it will trigger its viruses 16, 20 times over the course of the game. I wanted to use Valencia's big deck size in almost a balanced way. So the 5 extra cards just maybe want to play cards that I would normally trim down from my decks or cut from my decks because they were too inflexible or because the package was too large. So in this particular case, I've decided to play the Silverware Suite, the Spooned, Knifed, and Forked with Eater. And I think that really synergizes well with Valencia, given that she has that bad publicity and the ability to get more with investigative journalism. So it is a very slow deck. You do need to get the Eater online and then test some servers, keyhole in there, or dirty laundry here and there, and hold those blackmails. You never really run that remote unless it's with a blackmail. But when you do see too much adversity on that R&D, you just get in there with a knife or a spoon to take that ice down with the Eater, and then just keep on keyholing through. And the advantage of the bad publicity there is that when they have 3 or 4 credits worth of ice, the bad pub is rather inefficient because you still need to spend a good portion of your turn gaining credits before you can run again. But when they're taxing you for 2 or when they're taxing you for 1, that bad pub is insane. So the cheaper the servers are to go through, the more powerful that bad pub is. It has severely diminishing returns, but it's incredibly powerful when you only need 1 or 2 credits to make those runs. And so this Silverware Suite, in combination with Parasites, in combination with Data Suckers, in combination with even just some things like Spinal Fever is the
Spinal
console.
modem.
Spinal Modem is the console I'm playing right now. Spinal Feeder, Cyber Feeder, and Spinal Modem are the pieces I'm playing right now, and they've been very effective in those long games where you do want to make a few runs here and there and keep your money high to do things like slam down an Aether in the keyhole in the same turn, or spend an entire turn and using investigative journalism to gain a bad pub, but keep all those resources around so that you can install the rest of a suite at some point.
So would you say one of the issues with the keyhole eater combo is that it's quite taxing on your memory if you want to host other breakers as well? So would you say that you mitigate that by just straight up killing the ice that you do need to get through and eventually get through archives and just steal those agendas?
Oh, absolutely. Certainly with Aether and Keyhole and a modem or, a console, you can host two more pieces. So whether they're a Yogg and a mimic is a good one to have around. I like playing extra mimics because Swordsman is quite a strong card against the Aether decks. You only have three, so it's replaceable, but it is still a massive tax to get hit by that Swordsman. And who knows what else you're going to discard. But so either Keyhole, Mimic, Corroder, or Mimic Yogg can be a quite standard suite. The Yogg takes out so much ice by itself. And the Spooned is very important already because you do want to kill Lotus Fields with your Aether. So the Yogg is still doing a lot of work, even though it doesn't actually break too many code gates. Obviously, all the code gates above strength 4, because you have those spoons around. It's like that situation where you have Crypsis and other breakers making the Crypsis more efficient. It's that same situation where, because of your bad pub and because of your keyhole, just having some extra stuff around, like the Silverware Suite, makes that incredibly efficient, and you can just be incredibly aggressive with it. I've milled more than a few people out just because they couldn't keep up with
And
their
I think we
ice.
saw with the Spanish Influenza deck that Wilfie was sort of using the Crypsis as a way of landing the early siphons and just guaranteeing himself a way to get in. And Aether just does that so much more efficiently than Crypsis too, doesn't
I've tried spending my influence in a few different ways at this point. One way would be to make a kind of a mid-range archetype, emphasizing the Aether and emphasizing the wanton destruction and the account siphon, and really
How
emphasizing
has Wanton Destruction been for
it's
you?
insane.
Yeah.
It's so strong.
How do you gauge when you should be using it? Do you just use it whenever there's a window and you've got the spare clicks?
Honestly, the card is disruptive enough that, just like Siphon, you should probably just use it whenever you have a window. You definitely want to use it at the start of your turn, just like Siphon. So use it for two cards or use it for three cards. But the fact that it can take out ice, agendas, operations, it's incredibly disruptive. And if an agenda does end up in the bin, they need to find their Jackson, or they need to score a Hades Shard, or at least find enough ice to cover that weakness. And you're built to capitalize on that situation where their ice is spread out a little bit too thin, where their servers aren't taxing enough to really compete with the efficiency of having a bad pub or two. And then you chop down the server and just attack it aggressively over and over again with Keyhole. So one way to build the deck would be to emphasize that account siphon in the mid-range style. It could even end up tag me. I like to play it a little bit safer, and just the return of Wayland in this box set as well really sets up that paradigm where if I play Tag Me, I'm just going to lose to all the Scorch decks, so I need to play a lot of Plascreets, and then I need to install it in almost every game because there'll just be so many different Wayland archetypes running around. So maybe in a few months, when the new set hype has kind of cooled off, there's definitely space there to play a Tag Me strategy in the mid range. Right now, I'm just testing out a control strategy, so I've got my 12 influence and 3 hostages and 3 professional contacts because I have no imagination whatsoever. But the following 3 influence are actually in Crescentis, which I've been really happy with.
And for those of our listeners who are exactly like me, what is that card?
Crescentis is a one cost program that takes one memory. It's a criminal program that takes one influence. It has the ability, you can trash it after you break a piece of ice, immediately after you break a piece of ice, to derez that ice. So it's emergency shutdown, but during a run rather than after.
Excellent. So it pairs well with Ida as well.
And it just, again, it's a bit of synergy with the Aether. If you're pressuring their money in the right ways between all this ice, you can shut a Heimdall down, make them force it again, or shut down the toll booth and make them force it again before you spoon through it.
I had a question for you, Shazia. One of the things that I've thought about Anarch for quite a while is that Noise's ability is one of the most powerful things about Anarch, and the fact that you can't get that milling off R&D ability into other decks is one of the things that's been holding the faction back. And this box has given us Gravedigger, which is a card that reliably allows you to mill cards off the top of R&D at random. Have you? It synergizes very well with the Silverware Suite because it requires you to be trashing, so it's a 2-cost, 1 MU program, a virus. Whenever an installed corp card is trashed, place 1 virus counter on Gravedigger, click, and a hosted virus counter, the corp trashes the top card of R&D. It is a bit annoying that the ability costs a click, given that it takes quite a bit of investment to be trashing installed corp cards. But that being said, the ability to trash cards off the top of R&D at random is quite powerful just by using a click. So do you think this might find a place in your deck, given that it synergizes so well with the Silverware?
Yeah, no, it's a great little card. And I probably will come up to testing it at some point. The inclusion of Hostage had actually, as Tom had been doing me, had been prompting me a bit in the last few weeks to try and fit a scrubber into my Hostage decks. And I did promise him I would try and put a scrubber in my next deck with Hostage, which sounds like it's very far away from what we're talking about right now. But there are currently no slots for scrubber or imp or anything that would potentially interact with assets or operations from hand. And I think Gravedigger is going to start, you know, seeing a lot more play because with imp in faction, that's going to trigger quite a lot. And with even wizard, that's going to trigger quite a lot. Every Anarch deck worth its salt will try and play Parasite. And it's not even just when a corp card is trashed by you, it's when a corp card becomes trashed. So playing your Yogs out, making their code gates redundant, and then pressuring their economy, then means they're more likely to trash their Quandaries. That'll charge up your Gravedigger. They're going to maybe trash their Enigmas. So I probably will come to it at some point, because I think it is a great ability. At this point, I'm just kind of pressured for slots. I'm not really sure what cards are good and what cards are bad. So, you know, I'll probably find some stuff. There are lots of bad cards in the game.
Lastly, just on this topic, I've been toying around with a max build. I'm a very black and white person, so I either play control decks or aggro decks. I don't like mid-range decks, even though I've had some success with them in the past. We've been talking about max a lot together as a group. And, you know, we'd proxied up some decks a few months ago. We did mention that. And this isn't too far derived from that. So it's just extremely aggressive. I did play Andromeda for a very long time. But as we discussed recently, she's not as good. The 9 cards at the beginning of the game are less relevant these days. But I found so far Max to be, you know, even faster at just setting up that rig initially, mainly due to the fact that you've got so much interaction with your heat, you know, milling your programs and then being able to get them back with clone chips or retrieval runs is very efficient. So the influence is just on 3 Desperado, 3 clone chips. And the other thing you'll find is that you actually work through your deck very, very quickly. You'll draw your Desperados very quickly. You'll draw your daily casts very, very quickly and very efficiently. The highlight of the deck, which I hate myself for ever being skeptical of when Shilzy first told me to put it in, was Inject. Inject in Max is absolutely insane. You pay 1 credit, you reveal 4 cards, and you're either going to draw cards that you want, being your, you know, your daily cast, your economy cards,
your clone ships, your retrieval runs,
your desperado, or you're going to gain credits and fill your heap with targets for your clone ships and your retrieval runs, or you're going to get a mixture of both. There is no situation in which you play Inject and you're like, oh, that sucked. Like, I can't see it. The card is just absolutely insane. I think I'm not playing a lot of max decks at the moment. I'm currently playing Day Job. There's not really the deck space for it, as
Brian,
we discussed.
How can you not be playing Day Job? Max is on the card.
Oh, all right, of course. She's on the card. It must go in this deck, right? We've discussed Day Job in the past, and I think Liam really summed it up quite nicely in our Order and Chaos card highlighters, that Day Job is the equivalent of clicking Magnum Opus 4 times, which if you had a Magnum Opus, you're very rarely going to do. So the card is very inflexible. Instead, I do have an Armitage Code Busting, which is, I think, a card we've had access to for a very, very long time, and it's better than Day Job. Another card that I'd like to maybe put in the deck would be Amped Up, if I can find the space, because you're really going to win with Medium or Nerve Agent or some combination of the two.
Amped Up is so sweet. Yeah, I've been playing Amped Up, and it's insane.
It's been working out well for you?
Nuts,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
so I'd like to toy around with Amped Up. And the other thing we did, which we thought was a bit cute, was played one. The deck was originally playing 2 of each of the Breakers, but in the Barrier Breaker slot, we changed from 2 Corrodas to 1 Corroda, 1 Morningstar. Because if you can get like a turn 2 Morningstar for 3 credits off a retrieval run, or even 2 credits if you've already got a Desperado online, it can really put a lot of decks under quite a lot of pressure at the beginning and really saves you a lot of economy. So just having those economic swings. And I know, Shields, you've got your own list that you've been toying around with that plays Femme Fatale as well for that same reason.
I threw the conservatism out the window and I just was like, okay, cool. I'm never going to install any of these breakers, except maybe a Mimic, because that one's really good. So what kind of rig do I want? And I said to myself, well, I don't want a Mimic, actually. I want Femme Fatale and I want maybe a Torch. But I couldn't find the influence. But I certainly would like mediums and Dava Suckers and the Morningstar.
The Morningstar.
Because Ashigaru and Tyrant, those guys are jerks. Eli, that guy's been the bane of our existence.
Yeah, breaking Eli for one credit is where it's at, I think.
Oh, and my.
Not to mention, yeah, so Deja Vu, Clone Ship, all your recursion cards, same old thing. Spending two clicks to same old thing and inject at the beginning of your turn is very, very good. I think.
Or saving the same old thing for the late game, for the late having game. That retrieval run, or having that Deja Vu.
See, it's interesting. I was playing three same old things originally in my build, but I've cut them now, and I'm playing three retrieval run, three Deja Vu as my recursion. And two Clone Ship. I've gone to two Clone Ship. And I'm playing the Femme as well. Shields and Hades Shard.
So what are you playing instead of the same old thing? Because I'm playing the same recursion card.
Yeah, so I was just finding that too many times the same old thing was too efficient. Like, it's quite efficient to Shore Gamble. It's reasonably inefficient to inject. I mean, it's not awful, but you never feel like that's a really powerful play. Even same old thing in Retrieval Run is not incredible, particularly if you can get your... You should be able to get your programs back either by naturally drawing them, Deja Vuing them, or Clone Shipping them. So,
well, that said, Deja Vuing a program takes the same number of clicks.
The same number of clicks as what?
As in, you spend a click to play the Deja Vu and then a click to play the program, as opposed to spending two clicks and the run to play it from your heap with the retrieval run through.
Yeah, but it's cheap because you don't have to pay 3 credits for retrieval run. But yes, you have to pay for the program, but you also don't know how. You also aren't guaranteed that you're going to be able to get into archives with whatever rig you have in play, considering what you're doing is trying to get a program.
I think the main advantage I've been finding in the same old thing is that it helps you keep your hand size relatively low as you get into that mid-game stage, when you're not really holding on to any more massive breakers, or you're not really holding on to redundant programs, and you are holding on to that Deja Vu that you want to get double Parasite back with at some point, or you're holding on to that that Nerve Agent that you just really haven't found the window for, and you don't really want to tie up that memory or tie up those credits. Being able to drop down the same old thing and then permissibly discard that Nerve Agent, or just have a lot of redundancy in that transition from the heap to the hand and from the hand to play, I think is where the deck really wants to be.
Yeah.
Although I agree, it is hugely inefficient.
Yeah, and I just...
But that's okay, because everything else about the deck is wildly efficient.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it just hasn't been impactful enough, and with the deck slots as tight as they are, I just prefer to try and jam in some of the new tools, like Amped Up, and give those things a go, try and get some blowout turns going on. But yeah, there's definitely lots of different
options. Yeah, for sure. We did have an Amped Up turn where it was like Amped Up, Parasite, medium, 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 medium.
Win the game. Yeah, it's very good.
The card's dumb.
So something that the internet has been really excited about since the announcement of the card has been Eater and Keyhole as a combo. So now that we've got the cards and we've been able to play with them, do we think it's as insane as people are making it out to be? Or is it just completely nerfed by Chrysium Grid? Or is it a perfect sort of median where it's good reliably enough to be playable?
It's definitely a powerful combo. I mean, part of the problem is that Eater is efficient, but you still have to be able to get in. So you have to be drawing your Keyhole and your Eater early, or having access to them, and it's still reasonably difficult for Anarch to tutor up programs. So you're either going to have to be playing it in max and trying to use your natural card draw and milling to try and get at those programs earlier, or you're going to have to be splashing for ways to tutor up the programs. And then you're going to have to also have a sufficient economy to be able to make multiple runs on R&D a turn and play either other breakers or Hades Shard to get into archives. So if a corp just sort of sits there, ices the centrals, adds ice to archives, it could be reasonably difficult for you to get in for the win. That being said, you're seeing 3 cards each run, putting one in archives. It's reasonably good. Eater does get in much more efficiently than any other breaker we've seen. So if Keyhole's going to be good, that's the way it's going to be good. I'm not 100% convinced, because you still do have to get into archives at the end of the day, and the corp can sort of play around whatever you're doing. just by adding ice to those centrals. But it is very aggressive and very disruptive of the other things the co-op's going to be wanting to do. So if that's not part of their game plan, then it's certainly going to be disrupting them, forcing them into a different pattern of play to what they want to be doing.
Yeah, is that what you found, Chilzy?
Yeah, it is pretty inflexible. That said, Keyhole has always been a very, very aggressive card. Seeing three cards off the top and then making that shuffle and then maybe getting in there again, it's like Maker's Eyeing every single turn. So I'm not surprised at all that the card has some inefficiencies. It's the trade-off. And this is why, in particular, I wanted to fit this kind of combination into the Valencia control shell, because you had that blackmail for the mid-game and you had that ability to keep the ice low on centrals with your Silverware suite. That's it. It's not by any means perfect. You still only have three blackmails. Sometimes you don't have them. A few of the games I've played, they have just played a piece of ice on the remote and they are an agenda in it, and I've just not had the means to get in there. Because the Keyhole and the Eater by themselves and then the Silverware, so many slots already. You need all this economy in your deck. Then you need all these extra breakers, just as Jesse was saying, so that you can actually still make runs and still threaten to access cards. Otherwise, they'll just never raise their eye. Which sounds okay, except that then they'll dedicate all their resources to answering the Keyhole specifically, and you'll still not be able to get into servers because you still don't have any breakers. So yeah, it is. There are certainly limitations to what can be done there, and those limitations are certainly time. In the time that the corp is willing to give you, and sometimes memory that you have access to as well. If the corp just wants to be aggressive and you're playing either Keyhole, I mean, sure, maybe they don't ice R&D and you just kill them, but I've never met anyone that's willing to make that kind of gamble.
Well, one thing that happened, even though it is a bit high variance, but when Liam and I were testing recently, I was playing a sort of a control corp deck, and we were getting toward the late game. I'd used all my Jacksons, and Shieldsy just went in there, and he knew he couldn't get an Archives, but he just decided to get rid of all my agendas every time he could, and sort of effectively mill me out in a way, even though you couldn't get into Archives either.
You couldn't put 7 points together, or I couldn't put 7 points together, but the time constraints on the corp. So, yeah, there are certainly very, very real long game inevitability. You have, this is insanely inevitable. You know, you have the perfect kind of finisher once you have the cards around it. But those synergies towards the long game, you lose so much impetus. I'm just not sure whether that can be put together. Because every corp deck's going to play End the Run Ice. Every corp deck has the capacity to make credits, the capacity to advance ice. The capacity to advance agendas, because it's their game plan. And then hopefully the capacity to capitalize on windows to score within. And yeah, it requires a lot of investment, but doesn't actually close those windows at all. Every other breaker helps close those windows, either does not whatsoever. So you're very cold to just aggressive corporation decks. And, you know, that could very well be how the format ends up looking. We could have these Great Wayland decks, these controlling corp decks, and then these NEH, very aggressive NEH decks answering that. The aggressive NEH decks answering the controlling runners, and then the aggressive runners like Max and like Andromeda answering the controlling Wayland and the Hasbiro.
And I guess one of the interesting things that I've found about that sort of metagame development is that I spoke a bit earlier about the Building a Better World deck that I've been putting together, but I've also been putting together an Argus Security deck, which has a sort of similar game plan. You're wanting to be very aggressive behind light ice that's going to either tax the runner, insert Caduceus, Errand Boy, checkpoint. You've got these new Wayland ice that are not necessarily going to keep the runner out every time, but are going to be very efficient in the early game. And then you've got things like dedicated response teams, traffic accident, double mid-season replacement, snare as well. So you've got lots of ways that you can be laying out lots of remote servers, lightly icing them, asking lots of questions of the runner, and potentially scoring impactful agendas like false lead, profiteering, hostile takeover, to get you over the edge and help you to leverage those into further damage to the runner. So if you then go back to our discussion of Eater Keyhole, if an Eater Keyhole deck is playing against that, it's going to be reasonably expensive for them to get through things like Errand Boy, Archer, Checkpoint in the early game with an Eater, even once they can put stuff together. And then if they're not stealing 7 points all at once off their Keyhole, they're going to have to deal with the Argus Security ability as well, and potentially be taking tags, exposing themselves to flatline. So Corps have lots of new ways to be aggressive with this box. Traffic Accident, Argus, Checkpoint, lots of cards that they can utilize, and Errand Boy, which was not in this box but in the last pack, but works very well in that strategy. So I think, yeah, Corp's definitely going to have to change the way they're thinking about the game. The old styles of decks may not be the answer, but there's lots of opportunities for co-ops to sort of develop and think about the game in different ways to counter those more aggressive runner strategies.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking more about remotes in upcoming episodes. I think there's much more pressure on that now that a lot of the very aggressive strategies like Near Earth Hub are sort of nowhere near as good as they are in the meta.
I think we can just even say about Near Earth Hub that the better Near Earth Hub decks now are not necessarily conforming to what was the best strategy in the first year and a half, 2 years of the game. It's not necessarily just about let's keep only the Sand with maybe one or two ice in front of it in a remote and play the rest of the game from our centrals. It's about let's proliferate our remotes using the efficient assets and other cards that we and upgrades and agendas that we can put there behind reasonably efficient early game ice. Those are just cards that didn't exist for the first portion of the game, and corp decks are now finding new ways to string those together into cohesive decks that work well and ask far more questions of the runner than just how often can you get into R&D and HQ. So the game's developing really well, and remote servers are a big part of that.
Yeah, the new aggressive NBN deck could certainly be the world is yours, asterisk, just because you get to see that Astro that much more often. And we have seen in our league, Adam here from Melbourne won the league with a NBN deck, a Near Earth Hub deck, just like Jesse was talking about, that just proliferates these servers all the way down. And it's incredibly taxing to try and check them all. And if you don't check them all, he just mixes it up and chucks some agendas in there, and you just get absolutely blown away by them. Absolutely crushed me in the finals towards the end.
Always the runner-up.
Always the runner-up. I'm the runner-up of my life, let's face it.
Excellent. That's about all we have time for today. If you guys want to get in contact with us, you can do so by sending us an email at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter. Our handle is winningagenda. Or our like page on Facebook is The Winning Agenda. We'll also like to remind everybody that we're still running our segment competition, so you can send us in a suggestion for a topic or something you'd like to hear us discuss on the show. And if you win, we'll send you out a copy of the much sought after data pack, What Lies
and
Ahead.
And if you would like a postcard from Antarctica next time Brian heads down, just send us an email and I'm sure I'd be happy to oblige.
They do have a post office down there, right?
They do, and I'm designing all their postcards, and they all say ice to see you.
You literally. Yeah, Liz Campbell would certainly be proud.
Everybody laughing, you're the biggest loser in Netrunner because you got that joke.
Flavor special.
All right, see you guys. We'll speak to you next week.
Take it easy.
Sign off, Jesse.
Oh, hang on. Give me my cue again.
Sign off, Jesse.
Thanks, guys.